two village idiots with a love-hate relationship.
See, you got fat.
See, you still look like a 15-year-old girl, but not hot.
Who can't stop arguing over Oklahoma sports.
You know what, man? Why am I still talking to you?
Come on, we were doing good there, man.
It's the Just Okay Sports Podcast.
Sooner Nation, Thunder Nation, we are back. This is the Just Okay Sports Podcast. I am one of the Village Idiots here. Daryl, I'm here with my brother Jared, and we are ready to rock this thing out. How are you, my friend?
Good. Huh. Yeah. No, I'm good. It's hot. It's been raining. Everybody's complaining about the heat. By the way, California got hit by a hurricane before I did in Florida. So, you know, the world's ending probably. I don't know.
Yes.
Dude, it was like the first time since, what, it was like 1939, I think is the thing I saw.
It was a dumb stat. This is a true thing here today. So the heat index in Edmond today ended up getting up to like 113 today. So legitimate. I had to unload a bunch of root beer for our tailgate with Curtis Lofton on Saturday. After two trips to the truck, I come into this lobby area that we have that's on an air conditioner. And we have it set at like 82 degrees just to keep the edge off, right? And not let the paint melt off the walls. It was refreshing. It was so refreshing to stand in 82 degrees. So much so, I had to go pick my daughter up from school. And she had to help me with some stuff. She's like, Dad, it is so hot. I said, hey, come in here. Watch how nice it feels in here. So we walk into this lobby. And she says, oh, it feels so good. I go look and see what temperature it says on the wall. She was like, 82, and I was like, exactly. Like, it felt wonderful to be in 82 degrees.
Yeah, so it got so hot here. It's actually cooled off like the last week or so. I say cooled off. It still gets up into like the mid-90s here. But it was getting so hot in my office because like I have my gaming PC, that like you know, all my streaming stuff, and then I have like my work stuff. Like, I have all this electronic equipment. And this room is just the last one to get any sort of air push to it. And so it was the hottest room. This and the guest bedroom are like the two hottest rooms in the house, basically. And so I just had to go buy. I went and bought a little portable AC and hooked it up or whatever. And dude, like, I was literally just like, I like hooked it up and I just like sat in here and I'm like, it's funny because now this room is the coldest. So there's like literally, I think it was like Sunday. I mowed and I walked in the house, and like before I even took a shower, I came into my office because I shut the door to like keep all the cold air in. And I walked in here, and I just like sat. I literally just sat down on my chair. And was like, it feels so good. Yeah. It feels so good.
That's awesome. That is awesome. So, well, hey, if you are new here tonight, just so you know, we are not insiders. We are not journalists. We are not anything. Again, we are idiots that just like talking sports, and so we put it out there to help you feel better about yourself. So if it does that, please like, subscribe, leave a 5-star review, all the different things. Matter of fact, leave a 3-star or 2-star review. The name is Just Okay, so it will go just fine, and we will be happy about it. So tonight you're in for a treat. We are going to start this, I think, every year now. We'll see. I don't know. But it's the first annual Dark Hopium podcast. So in other words, we are going to go through the absolute worst case scenario of why this team, that being OU football, just tanks it like crazy and ends up being 6-7 again. And we're also going to give you the version of the story that for us, we believe that this team will be in the college football playoff, right? We're going to be in those two camps. Before we do, we should make mention on the recruiting front because, you know, everyone's real excited. Let's start with Williams-Wanneri. How about we start with that, right? He was in Oklahoma for a scrimmage wearing OU cleats, wearing OU gloves, and said, I believe his quote was, it was the right decision for me at the time to choose Missouri.
And I want to see how it plays out.
For everybody that is all excited because this opens the door. Look, we said this from start to finish. If you are a 5-star recruit, your recruitment is always open until your name is on the paper with the correct time stamp on there, a la Peyton Bowen, right? Like, it has to have all those things. Yes, OU's going to still recruit him. Yes, they're going to still put their efforts in. He's going to Mizzou, right? Like, everybody that wants to make this seem like this is a big conspiracy deal, he was in Oklahoma with Oklahoma media poking at him. Don't read too much into it.
So can I just give my little, like, tinfoil hat, like, you know, the red strings behind me meme?
Absolutely.
Well, it's not really even a conspiracy, but when you look at his position in all this, it makes perfect sense for him to commit to Missouri more than it does OU, right? Because if he commits to Missouri right now,
right,
he, like you said, we already know he's going to be committed. Even if he's committed to OU, he's still going to have Georgia, Alabama, Missouri, who anybody in the country that wants a defensive lineman is going to be knocking on his door.
Right.
That wasn't going to change regardless of what happened. But if he commits to Missouri, right, they're probably offering him a pretty sizable NIL package is what I would presume. There's been some talks of that. I'm not saying that's why he committed there. But he can also commit and say, like, he can kind of be like the face of that recruiting class. Now, if Missouri starts going, you know, 4-8 or whatever the record was, you know, not doing Missouri things, right? Then he can jump ship and come to OU, right? Like, he doesn't have to be the face of the OU class. OU's already got plenty of people in the class that can build the class, right? Mm-hmm. If he's going to go to Missouri and have any chance of them having momentum for Missouri, it makes the most sense for him to be in that boat right now.
Right.
Like I said, if it goes off the rails, then that's basically, I think what he was saying was like, look, I think it's a little bit more of a chess game than people realize, you know, because like I said, if he does that, he may be able to get a couple of other big name recruits to come to Missouri, because like Missouri's got like quite, you know, they have quite a few recruits, more than you would think, coming out of Missouri in the, just that kind of like Midwest region. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that it's a smart move on his part, honestly. I mean, as much as I'd love for him to have committed to OU, I think it's really, if he was going to commit to Missouri, this is his only way to do it. Or have any chance of committing to Missouri, as I guess I should say. So that's my thought is, I think he's having to play the long game. I don't follow Missouri closely, clearly. But I don't see anything on them that like makes me feel like they're suddenly going to be a SEC contending team or anything of that nature, right? Or even, you know, they might fight for bowl eligibility. I don't see anything that gives me like, you know, grand hope for that roster. So there's a very good chance I think he ends up at OU in the end, or another school for that matter. But we can get into some of that later. But I think that's just what makes sense. I think that's like the, to be honest with you, I think that's the most brilliant plan he could have.
Yeah, maybe so. I mean, I do think NIL is playing a way bigger role. We've already talked about it. It's been talked about ad nauseum, and he starts getting paid next week if he signs any kind of financial aid agreement with Missouri. And, you know, why not, you know, at this point do those things? So, but that turns all the attention and puts way more pressure on the staff to land the one and only David Stone, who will commit in 4 days on the 26th. He's going to be committing and, you know, again, we are not insiders. Okay. I don't know anybody in David Stone's camp. I don't run with his buddies or anything else. Now, when you think about things like Jaden Jackson was basically signed, sealed, delivered to Texas. And by the way, when he came to visit, David Stone just showed up to walk around with him at OU. That seems interesting that Jaden Jackson then ended up choosing OU, or yeah, that Jaden Jackson chose OU with David Stone there walking through the process with him, right? He's obviously from the area. I'm not saying anything that nobody doesn't know. I think the linchpin in all of this is going to be mom, right? And that doesn't mean that she's out for anything. I think whatever it is, I'm not sure if it's really that they just want David to see the world. I don't know if David got involved with some people in his younger years that they don't want him associating with, and they're afraid that if he comes back that that could happen. I don't know, right? I don't know. But it is obvious that the family there for a while was not very happy about the prospect of him coming to OU. I know that that has been addressed. I know it's been dealt with. I think it's going to come down to it's going to come down to how much does mom say, I really want this, or I would really prefer this, but it's your decision, right? I think that's what it's going to come down to.
I mean, I think a part that people have to realize too is that he's basically grown up in Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. So his connections are in Oklahoma so far. So in a way, it kind of makes sense for his mom to be like, you know, given, let's say, something disastrous happens, right? And his football career ends at Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. He's going to have networked in Oklahoma. So he's going to be in Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas if he goes to another school somewhere across the country or wherever, right, then he's going to be connected in other areas, right? Like if he goes to Florida, then he's going to be connected down here. If he goes to Georgia or whatever, like any other school you can think of, they all have a metropolitan area near them that you, when you go to a university like that, you get to network with people that are connected. So, you know, as much as I love the state of Oklahoma, would I want my kid to at least be networked in Oklahoma and another place? Absolutely. So right. I think that plays a part in it. I think that people kind of like gloss over. I mean, again, we don't know all the backstory to it, but I think it's sort of things like that. I don't think it's a hatred. The feeling I get, I guess, is right. It doesn't feel like a hatred for Oklahoma. I think it's just that they're wanting him to kind of branch out. Yes. But again, it could be that he has some friends here that are bad influences or whatever. But the good thing is like, you know, when you're on the football team, like when you're at OU and your life becomes football, so that your friends become, I don't say you don't have friends outside the locker room and stuff, but it's like those guys run around together. You know, I mean, that's who you spend all your time with. It's like working two jobs with the same person, right? Because like, you know, a lot of them are in the same classes. A lot of them are going to tutoring together. A lot of them are at practice and film. And it's like they spend all day together. So, you know, I don't really think that's the case, but it could be. I don't know. But I can just drive over to Tampa Bay because I'm pretty sure Gerald McCoy still lives over there. And I'll just see what he says. I mean, I can get that source. So,
no, he's back in the OK, baby. He's back in the OK.
Oh, is he?
But he does still have a house in Tampa. That's for sure.
Yeah. I know he posted something about being in Tampa like a couple weeks ago or something.
Yeah. And I, you know, we've said it forever, David Sohn's the key piece, but the other one too is Dominic McKinley. I mean, I think that now more than ever, you know, more attention, more resources, more time, more relationship building, more pitching needs to go at those two guys. Okay. And again, I even feel like for the team moving forward in the future, the interior needs to be bolstered a lot more than the edges do, right? We feel good for another year or two on the edges, but the interior's really got to get filled up. So those guys, in my opinion, need to be the focal point anyway. So that's kind of the recruiting updates. I know Andy Bass as well is announcing this week. So we'll see what happens there, Heritage Hall kid. And if you haven't watched the kid play, obviously he doesn't play wide receiver, but it's very Gavin Freeman vibes. Short white dude that when you see him just take off, it's like, holy crap, that dude's got juice and he can really move laterally and he can get north and south really, really, really fast. And so be interesting to see what they do there and how that all ends up going. So what do you say about some dark hopium time now, J-Rod?
I'm ready.
All right, very good.
Now, let me preface this. This is all hypothetical, people. This isn't actually...
Yes.
We're literally going as dark and as bright as possible. So this isn't actually our feelings either way. This is correct. Just us giving hypothetical scenarios. So
correct. This is, as we look at it today, this is going to be our opinions. If these things happen, this team is screwed, right, to the max capacity. And there are possibilities of things that, like, this isn't, you know... An earthquake happens in the third quarter and half the team gets swallowed up, right? These are legitimate. Yeah,
it's not Bane walks out of the tunnel, you know.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not gonna be anything like that.
But it's legitimate things that we're concerned about, and that if they go as bad as they could go, then we think that the season could be awful. And the things that we believe that if they go as well as they could possibly go, then this team really could surprise a whole bunch of people like a 2000 team did at one point in time. So that's kind of how we're approaching it. So again, it's the dark and the hope all there together going through it. So Jared, I will let you kick us off. Why don't you start us with the good vibes, right?
Okay.
And that way everybody can get what they want right here at the start, which is dark Daryl, right? So you're going to go good. I'm going to go bad. You're going to come back with some bad, right? And then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, I mean, I'm going to start off with like the thing that I keep harping on is it's another year in Brent Venables' system. It's another year of them learning a very complex defense. Like I said, everybody knows this. Like I said, there's the tales of guys that have played for Venables going to the combine and being like, this film study is easy, dude. because it was so difficult, like the way his defense is, it's so detail oriented and all those things that it's like you have to know that thing I mean, it's even been said, I think Danny Stutzman said it, and somebody else said it, like, where it's like, in his defense, you especially, I mean, obviously, if you're the linebacker, yeah. But it's like, even like the secondary guys and the defensive line were like, you have to know everybody's playbook. Like, you have to know where everybody is at all times, because depending on what happens, your play changes completely. So, I think that's something that's like just another year of letting that bake in and getting these guys acclimated. Because, like I said, people still we haven't talked about it enough, or I feel like people have not talked about it enough this season about how quickly Venables had to get in and establish a system, and like how behind the eight ball he was on doing that. Especially, like I said, and with his system, it was kind of doomed for failure, right? His first season. So, and like I said, not even say, like, look at the bowl game and looked at the season went on. Like, it kind of got a little bit better and better. That's my first thing. The second thing is, I think you're going to have a lot more of these young guys showing up. Like, we've already seen, like I said, you already have Barnes and Sawchuk have already shown stuff. You know, we've heard great things about, like Petaway. We've already heard some stuff about him. You know, you're starting to see that talent that's coming in the last class or two that he's been able to put together that I think are going to really shine. That have just, like, I think last year he kind of had to lean on the veteran guys because he didn't have a choice, right? Like, you can't take a high school kid and be like, I need you to learn this super complex college playbook and just jump out there. Like, almost nobody can do that. So I think he's going to be able to turn to those guys now and be like, hey, like, you've been able to let this grow and he can start to look to them. And I think that there's a lot of talent in those guys. So, you know, I think that's going to be a big positive for them. Another positive, Dylan Gabriel, I think he's going to have a better season. I mean, we've talked about it, like, really honestly, in my opinion, there's probably two games last season that I would chalk up his performance being a major factor in them even losing games. Did he play great in all the other games? No, absolutely not. But he played serviceable, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and we talked about that at all of last season.
Right.
So honestly, even if he just basically eliminates those games, it's like, that's a totally different looking season, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, what'd that be? 8-7 or whatever that breaks out to, whatever the math is, 8-6 or whatever, 8-7, whatever. That looks a lot better than 6-7, right? There's a lot more to his game that I think he's going to develop. And he's talked a lot about improving the things that he's weak at and acknowledging where he's weak. You know, you highlighted like just the inaccuracy he has on certain throws and, you know, certain play designs. It just felt like he just could not get the ball there, even when people were wide open. So yeah, there's just a lot for him to, I think there was a lot for him to improve. And again, he came in, I mean, he was fresh. He knew Levy's system, but people also forget he hadn't played for Levy in a year. Yeah. So, you know, there was a little bit of.
And I would also, I mean, even add on to that, Jared, like, he had never played at a place with the pressure of Oklahoma. I mean, like, right? Like, can you imagine walking over and seeing Heisman Park every day and going, like, those guys were just here?
Like, oh, dude. Don't even give me. Dude, I live right next to UCF. Okay. Let's not talk about UCF. Okay. I know what you mean. I mean, so yeah, it's going to be a different experience. I think that's three, right? Is that three? Mm-hmm. That's three things. Another thing that I think is we've got some guys that have come in on the defensive line. I think in the trenches, you have a lot of potential, I should say, right? There's a whole lot of potential. You know, you've got Trace Ford, you've got, forget the Notre Dame kid's name. You know, you've brought Lacey. In some guys. Yeah, you've brought in some guys that are going to bolster, that look, like we've talked about, look different, fit more of a Venables style of at least physical look. And even what we've seen of them play, seemed like they fit that bill. I know whether they'll be able to play in a Venables system or not is still be determined, but. I think that's a big thing for them to get some guys in there like that, because I think, again, they were having to, you know, MacGyver together some stuff to try to even make it work. And even on the offensive line, I would say there's still potential there. I'm going full positive here. I do think there's a lot of potential there. It's just going to be, how do I say, I think the potential there's thinner, or maybe the ceiling's not quite as high. I just don't think there's as much depth on the offensive line. But at the same time, like, there's some guys that we've heard good things, and, you know, but it's like, it does feel, honestly, it's like there was times last season where it's like the offensive line couldn't have played much worse than they did. You know, that's probably going to improve. And then I think my last thing is, like, is the secondary. You've got a lot of guys that are, you know, like, we've already talked about Bowen. I don't know if Bowen will play or not, but you're getting guys that look like that in there. And like I said, and there's a lot of talk about a kid that's a freshman, right? That's a true freshman. But you also have Woody Washington. You have guys that have shown those glimpses. And again, the secondary and a Brent Venables system is very important. But it's like, I feel like that's a position group that's really going to shine. And that's what you're going to need, especially in the Big 12. You know, there's a lot more pass happy teams, obviously. And we hear that every time we turn on our TVs. But yeah, I think that the guys are there. I feel like the guys that they have on the roster now are more talented than OU's had in a long time. Mm-hmm. And have shown that on the field, right? You know, because we've had guys that we've been like, oh, this guy's crazy athletic, right? And then they don't pan out. But you've seen guys that have, that are athletic and have showed out and have shown glimpses. It's just putting it all together through the course of a season, not just have, because it's like you would have a guy. And again, that kind of shows that youth. Cause I feel when you look at the roster, you have to look at it as a team full of freshmen in his first year, right? Like, you have to look at it as a team full of freshmen because they're all new. They're all having to try to put these things together. And when you look at their play, when you really look at last season, even the seniors look like freshmen, right? And the way that they weren't as consistent and they weren't, you know, they didn't know what to do and all those things. And I think, like I said, I think that's going to get remedied, and you have those guys that if they could string it together, it's like you could have actually a pretty legit secondary, even if you don't play any of the freshmen or anything like that. So I think that's kind of where I'm at, but that's my five. So
I like it. I like it. I like it. You know, I think out of those things, I do think that obviously, you know, there's no surprise that quarterback play is just important, you know, and that's going to be on my list too. I think that what you said there is really, really, really good. And just, you know, again, youthful.
One more thing. This is, I guess it's not really a six, but it's like a subheading for the quarterback for Dylan Gabriel. If Dylan Gabriel goes down, we don't have Davis Bevel as our only option.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean,
I hate to be that guy. Like, I don't, like, nothing against Davis Bevel as a person, but good Lord, I've never seen somebody so inept in a football game as I did that game.
Yes, but again, you know,
it was a bad situation to be thrown in.
It's a bad situation. You were already down big, and, you know, or you go down big really quickly, and your first time to play for OU is OU Texas. I mean, that dude has never played in anything like, you know what I mean? Just that, just a rough, rough situation. So anyways, all right, I like it. So you think if these things come together, this is a playoff team. That's where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it's like a lot of small things, but it's like again, we kind of talked about it. We really, when you look at the point differential, like from last season, like the average points that OU lost by, it's like, dude, they were, it's small details that kept them from being I don't know if they've been a playoff team last year, but being in a Big 12 conversation at least or whatever. And it's like, and I think this is a better team than it was last year.
Right.
So.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Absolutely.
So give me your dark. Tell me how I'm an idiot and how bad this is going to get for us.
Well, you know, one of the words that keeps being thrown around. So let me just start with the darkness, and let me give y'all a lesson in propaganda, right? Propaganda's whole role is to pull your attention over here, right? Look at this thing so you don't see what's happening right here, right? Like that's kind of the idea. And one of the propaganda pieces we have heard since Big 12 media days is competitive depth, right? Competitive depth, competitive depth, competitive depth. Well, it ain't there at tight end. So that's my number one right now. If Austin Stogner goes down with an injury, you literally cannot line up with a legit any kind of tight end on the field. You know, now, do I think that some of those guys, like Caden Helms, the Jason Llewellyn, I love Cade McIntyre, but we have no idea what that looks like. We have no idea what they're capable of or not capable of.
Well, like, and Cade needs that weight.
Yeah. And, like, let's be honest, Austin Stogner has not been the healthiest tight end since he, unfortunately, as a freshman, he goes down with a crazy kind of bone bruise situation that turns into a massive infection. The dude's in the hospital for like a month, right? Like he just, he has never bounced back from that. And again, that there's so much that does for this team, right? Like I say it all the time. One of the things that drives me more nuts than anything is when you're not down by four scores and people go five wide, because the minute you go five wide, the only options are for the quarterback to run the ball or to throw it. Like that's it. And so you're limiting yourself on what can happen, right? Without a tight end on the field, when the tight end is there, he could be blocking down. He could be chipping and running around. Like he could do this. He could run the seam. He could run that. Like there are so many things that he has to make that defense think through and consider, especially at his size in the red zone. He opens so many things up. If they cannot find tight end depth, this team is going to struggle. It is going to struggle to run the football. It's going to struggle to keep teams on their heels. And you're going to be asking Dylan Gabriel, right, to do some things that he has shown that he is not very good at, namely hitting wide receivers and especially the short slot receivers over the middle, which he cannot do. He showed in the spring game he can't do it. So that's my number one reason why this team is in major trouble this year. And then that kind of flows into number two. DG, I said it a few weeks ago. If I was the defensive coordinator, I would run cover two the majority of the game, and I would tell my safeties to never come inside the hash marks. I would tell them to stay on the outside half of the hash marks the entire game, because the amount of throws hit over the middle of the field last year is almost non-existent, right? And again, we saw in the spring game, LV Bunkley Shelton comes wide open in the end zone. All he's got to do is punt the ball to him, and he overthrows it into the eighth row. Like he struggles to see that. And if DG cannot this season find the middle of the field, defenses are going to do exactly what we're saying. They are going to cover the outside parts of the field, and they're going to abandon the middle of the field until he proves that he can do it. And at this point, he can't. And at that point, you are limited. You are limited in everything you can do as a team. And the offense is going to become very frustrated. People are going to start pointing at Levy. Levy's going to have to start answering questions. You're going to see this team begin to unravel right down. That you're going to start hearing the "we want Jackson" chant come out of the stand. And it's going to get ugly real, real fast. Right.
Mm-hmm.
My number three, the DBs have not yet figured out how to communicate. I mean, we heard about it in the scrimmage a few weeks ago that, you know, good Lord. I mean, I understand it's a scrimmage and all the different things, but I mean, they said what? Nick Anderson had three touchdowns, and then Andrell Anthony had two or three touchdowns. Gavin Freeman has a touchdown. I mean, it was just like, here, you have a touchdown. You, and like listening to guys that were there watching the scrimmage, it's, well, the defensive backs were struggling to communicate who had what. Well, isn't that what we saw last year? Is them not being on the same page? And granted, there weren't endless busts, right? But that those are the backbreakers in a game. You're in a one-score game, and all of a sudden, this guy doesn't tell that guy, here's what we're doing, and you give up 60-yard touchdown, and the place erupts or the place deflates, and there it goes. And that's where you go 6-7 with five of them being one-score football games, right? Like, these DBs cannot just know the defense better than they did last year. These DBs cannot just be more physical and more imposing. They have to be able to talk to each other and see what's going on and communicate with one another. And if they don't, it's going to be a long year, because let's be real, your other corner is going to be a guy that you're breaking in either out of JUCO or that's never played before. One of your safeties that everybody's high on, and Reggie Pearson, is a guy that just keeps traveling from one school to another and doesn't seem to really solidify himself anywhere. Key Lawrence sometimes looks like he can't, you know, tackle a statue. And then you got Peyton Bowen, that's a true freshman. So you're that's what you're counting on at this point. Like, they're going to make mistakes, but the communication level better be there. You get mossed, we can all live with it. But do not miscommunicate and give up the big plays. My number four, Levy's play calling stays where it was last year. Now, I want to be very clear. Jeff Levy put an offense together that scored enough points to be more than efficient and to win a lot of football games. At the same time, there's a reason why when you look at their average scoring drive that it's like 45 seconds long, and that's because it felt like all of last year, Jeff Levy could sit there and go, I can get 80 yards on this play, and I know I can, and he could. But when it came to third and three and just needing to make sure he could get 3 yards, he was absolutely sometimes incapable of putting a play together that would work, right? We saw several moments last year, right? It's really funny, right? We used to always say with Lincoln, that scripted first drive that Lincoln would have in those really tight games, they would just march right down the field. We'd be like, holy crap, Lincoln's got their number all day. And then the next drive, it'd be like, we don't know what we're doing, right? Like, it just kind of starts to go down. Levy was the opposite. He would start games going three and out, and the offense just looking like it had no idea what it was supposed to do. Like, those are the kinds of things you can't do. Now, you can punt on your first drive, but we can't have four games this year where the scripted, here's our four plays we know we can get, they can't go three and out on those plays, right? Like, that cannot happen. So that has to get better. And Levy has to get better at, you know what? We got 8 minutes to go in this football game and we're up three. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to find a way to chug out 8 minutes of this freaking clock. If we have to run it, if we have to dink and dunk screens, if we have to dink and dunk slants, like, I'm going to get 8 minutes off this clock and go. But if he doesn't do that, it's going to be a long, long year. And then the last is this. If all those things above happen, then this last is going to happen. And that's the 24 and the 25 recruiting class are going to start to implode. If this team starts the year off, you know, whatever, 3-3, right? Or somehow ends up at a 3-3 mark, watch out. And you want to talk about calling for heads at that point. Now the recruiting prowess of Venables is going to go out the window and of Bates and of everybody else. And it's going to be absolutely toxic. And this team, again, we'll have its second losing season for the first time in what, 20 whatever years.
Mm-hmm.
That's my doom. That's my darkness. Like, when I think about this team, that's going to really put them in a pinch.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of things I actually agree with you on, which tastes terrible coming out of my mouth. But you know, it's one of those things of I do, like, 'cause that was actually one of my points I was going to make, is the long term ramifications if you don't put it all together. Right. Like, if you don't show improvement, it's like, I don't think people, the doom side of me wants to go, we're close to being being the 90s Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Right. If we don't put it together, and this season's got a lot riding on it. So I definitely like, basically all you said, I agree with. It's going to be extremely hard to keep a class together if you're 3-3. And especially if you get in later in the season, even if you're, you know, even close, like I said, even if you don't, at this point with the class that they have, if they don't win 9 games or more, it's going to be really hard to keep everybody in the boat. You might be able to keep some of them, but you're not gonna be able to keep all of them, I don't think. Yeah. So yeah, but I mean, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think that there's a lot of, like I said, there's a lot that's riding on. Like, one thing that people don't talk about enough, I don't feel like, is there's a lot riding on the coaching staff, in the sense of, like, again, the little details of, think about last year, about all the clock management errors we had.
Right.
There was probably like 4 or 5 games where it was like you had atrocious clock management, or you had, you know, just terrible play call awareness or whatever it was. Right. Like, there was it felt like a freshman coaching staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to come back? Is that going to be remedied now? Did the coaches sit down and watch film on what they were doing when it came to those things? You know, I remember us driving. I think we were driving back from Houston, listening to the Texas Tech game.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were like screaming because there was some clock management error there on the first. I don't remember what it was exactly, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like when you're hearing it on the radio and you're already like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, Those things.
So just double up, man. Just like, let's just go with it. Like, you're give us your doom. You gave us your positivity of why this team's going to win. Now give it just. Let's just get all the doom out in the middle and bookend it with the opium.
Okay, so like I said, the coaching staff's got to figure out the small things. They've got to figure out the clock management. They got to figure out play call awareness. They got to figure out not being so much horse with blinders is how it felt like, you know, like they were just hyper-focused on one aspect of the game or whatever. And there was just like, you know, you didn't have that chess play that you would hope you would have from your coaching staff. Like I said, the recruiting stuff I've basically already talked about. I'm actually going to basically use one of my ones for my positive. So take this for you, Will, because I think it's that much of a swing one way or the other. I think the floor is incredibly low and the ceiling is incredibly high. The trenches, what happens if this potential doesn't pan out, right? Like, you have some guys, like I would say Trace Ford has shown that he can do something, but is he going to stay out of injury? Is, you know what I mean? He's in a different system now. And all the other guys, it's like they have, you know, they don't have as much. I should say they have as much film. Like they weren't like Lacey wasn't like a longtime starter at Notre Dame. It wasn't like he was like a 4-year starter or something. So you have all these guys that you're having to really count on. Like I said, the offensive line's the same way. And like I said, the offensive line's thin. It feels like we're not hearing. When we do hear good things, we hear about the starters, but like who we feel like is going to start. But you don't hear anything about like, oh, well, by the way, so-and-so, this freshman kid or this sophomore, this guy we got transferred in. You don't, like, I haven't really heard that.
Yeah.
So is it going to be one of those things where we're going to be like 2009, where it's like, our whole offensive line is going to be decimated because we lose one guy.
Yeah.
You know, so that's going to be tough. You know, and I think that that's a big thing. And I don't know. It's so hard for me. I'm so bad at being the dark guy. I'm so much more of the positive guy. Cause part of me wants to be like, but you know, but, yeah, I mean, and then, like you said, there's the secondary, like I was talking about earlier, it's kind of the same with the secondary in that I feel like they have a lot of guys that are, if they can put together and they can start doing that communication, I feel like that's kind of getting blown out of proportion. Cause I have seen some people on Twitter talking about the communication stuff, not saying it's not an issue. And not say it was an issue last year, but it's like, it's also fall camp. Like, you might have some of those things right now.
Sure.
But at the same time, if they don't, like you say, get real hairy real quick, because again, people are, I feel like this year in the Big 12, for one, there's a lot of unknowns, mm-hmm. right? Like you're going to be playing a ton of schools who are playing in a Power 5 conference for the first time ever and are going to be playing. So you don't know what the competition is going to be like, right?
Yeah.
As much as I don't even want to say UCF, it's like, I honest to God, I almost dislike UCF as much as I dislike Texas. That's how bad their fan base is. But you know, it's like, we don't know what they're going to be like, right? Maybe they're really good. You know, maybe they just had a bad season. You know, like, we don't know. Nobody in Oklahoma's followed UCF closely. To know in the ins and outs, right? And there's all these new schools, so you just don't know. And like I said, they're all going to be gunning every single team. That's the other thing that we're going to have to talk about. Every team in the Big 12. I know it says that we say this every year, but especially this year.
Yeah.
Oklahoma and Texas are going to have targets on their back, yep. Like big ones. And I'm talking about like bigger than usual. They always do because they're the two blue bloods, but it's going to be on a different level this year. And I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm sure somebody's going to get in the comments or something and say something, but it's like, I don't want to blame officiating, but it was like, it was really suspect that there was so much
that like there was not one holding call in favor of Oklahoma last year.
Yeah.
Not one. So yeah. That defensive line the entire year was never held to the point of drawing a flag. The entire season.
Yeah. And it's not like, I mean, there was plenty of times that we were screaming. I mean, I know we're, as OU fans, we all scream at our TVs, right? But there's plenty that I was like, you could have called something. So it's
just put it this, like, look, we don't have to beat around this bush. When you literally play more snaps than anyone in the country in Power 5, which Oklahoma did on defense, they played more snaps on defense than any Power 5 school in football. And you don't get one flag thrown for a holding call. Like, sorry. Like, that's they not every single team played with their fundamentals perfectly on the offensive line all day long, every day. Like, no.
And I want to say this because I don't want people to think that I'm trying to like take the Big 12 as a conference as a whole or the administration of the Big 12. It easily could just be refs, right? Like, you have to understand these refs are Big 12 refs. They're paid by the Big 12. They're probably, you know, I mean, they could hold some sort of animosity or whatever at OU in Texas because they're leaving the conference, right? Because people have to realize before all these other schools joined, people didn't know what was going to happen to the Big 12, right? Like, there was that period, you know, kind of even last season where people didn't really know what was going to happen because you didn't have some of these schools that you didn't know for sure were going to join and when they were going to join and all that stuff. Was the Big 12 going to fold? Like, we saw what just happened with the Pac-12. Really, when you look back at the scenario the Big 12 was in, kudos to the Big 12. They were able to handle it and get some teams in. But they were close to being like the Pac-12 is right now.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, so I, you know, the officiating could maybe not go our way, but yeah. And then like, also like, this is going to be, this is going to hurt take coming out, but I guess I got to go full dark here. Texas might be that good. They have the talent. They've had the talent every year. We've talked about it. Every year. They have more talent than nearly every other school in the country. Mm-hmm. You know, outside that, if you're not a school named Bama or Georgia, and they don't put it together, but it's like, I do think Sark's building at least a better culture than's been there in a while, right? Since maybe I would say Charlie Strong, and Charlie Strong was like, hey, I think he built a good culture of like building good men kind of thing, but I don't think he built a good winning culture, right? I think Sark's kind of trying to get more there. So I don't know. I don't know how to feel about Sark yet, but it's like, if Texas is that good, it's like, my thought process is, even if you go, like, let's say you win 10 games, but you lose to Texas again, 49-0. That's pretty much as bad as going 6-7, even to recruits, right? The fan base, especially, but especially if you, even to recruits, like, why would I just not go to Texas? Because a lot of these guys, a lot of the guys had Texas in their top 3 or 4 or 5 or whatever.
Right.
Maybe they just say, well, then maybe I'm going to decommit from Oklahoma and go to Texas because they're beating the crap out of Oklahoma now 2 years in a row. Yeah. So,
yeah, let's not pretend like 49-0 didn't influence Colt Baskin. Colton Bassett last year. Like, I know he's going to say, well, I grew up a fan, blah, blah, blah. Like, 49-0 changes your mind. Whereas if that game is 49-0 in OU's favor, he's going, you know, I love Texas, but man, I picked the right side. You know, I mean, that stuff definitely influences that for sure. So,
all right, so now that I've gone dark, J-Rod, give me your positive. Put your crimson color glasses on for me and tell me how it's gonna go.
Okay, you played up in yours. I'm gonna go a little bit further. Right, you said number one was another year in the playbook. Right, kind of understanding. I think that's being thrown around a lot. And I actually don't think it was the issue last year. I don't think the guys were lost in their assignments. What I think that you're going to see this year that's going to push this team to being 12-0 is the reality is that they did not have a football roster with any football IQ. And if we see that the guys that they have brought in have football IQ, that changes everything, right? So, for instance, you can be in a, you know, cover two man scenario on a 3rd and 4 where your outside guys are on islands. And part of the package is to, you know, play off coverage as a way to disguise, right, that you're in man coverage. But if your football IQ doesn't remind yourself to not bail out of there at the snap of the ball, then you're handing the other team a 1st down on 3rd and 4. And how many times did we watch that the last 5 years, right? Where we see our guys playing 8 yards off, and as soon as the ball snaps, they're bailing out, right, on a 3rd and whatever, and basically just gift wrapping a 1st down for the other team, right? It's those little things, right? It's knowing that, yes, I need to disguise my coverage, but I also need to do it in a way where I can still get to what my assignment is, right, to do this. Or, hey, I know that this is the situation, so let me disguise my coverage this way so that, right, it baits them into what it is that we're wanting to do as a defense to where we can put the clamps. And it has felt like for four seasons, we have no clue how to do that, right? We like, okay, perfect example. I'm going to really get people wound up. Buki. When you listen to Buki in an interview, Buki knows football. Buki knew football. He understood what teams were trying to do. He understood what the defense was trying to do. At a very quick clip, he figured that out. What he could not figure out is how not to hit a guy that's right in front of the referee on a third down when he has nothing to do with the play, right? Like he did, he could not figure out how to not get personal fouls. He could not figure out how to not line up in a scenario where he's in a bad position. He could not figure out how to get his hands down on the hip, right? If you're going to pull on a jersey, as opposed to reaching up here and grabbing the sleeve, right? Where everybody can see you grabbing. That's football IQ. That's what I'm talking about, right? Like you got to learn how to hook an arm as opposed to grab a jersey, etc. Like it wasn't that Buki didn't understand concepts. He just wasn't smart enough to get out of his own way in the midst of the concepts. So one of the things I think you're going to see on this team is that, right? And matter of fact, you're already hearing Peyton Bowen say this last week in an interview, right? He said, look, I now understand the concept of the defense enough that I know how to read the quarterback in such a way that I know that on this play, because this, this, and this happened, I can actually leave my guy to go be another set of help to whatever this play is over here. That's football IQ.
Well, right? So, yeah, can I just add something to this? Yes. As a little analogy that popped into my head? Obviously, I'm race guy, whatever, like cars and all that. It's like NASCAR is what we had before, right? Like it's very simple. It's very bare bones, just kind of raw speed. That is what it is. What we're going to now is Formula One, right? Like it's down to percentages. It's down to like milliseconds. You know what I mean? It's down to a science of you have to like, you know, we've heard about Teddy talk about like, I was two steps out of position and Brent was losing his mind.
Right.
Right. That's where we're at. I think guys can grasp. That's my point. Like, I agree with you. I'm just saying, like, I think that there's that. You can look at a Formula One car, like you can take a NASCAR driver and put him in a Formula One car and he's going to be able to drive it. Right. But for him to be able to compete against other Formula One drivers is going to take a long time of learning that car and learning how it handles and getting all those minor, tiny little percentages down to where you can be fast. And it's the same thing. These guys, I agree with you. I think some of them knew it, but like I felt like there was times where it wasn't like they didn't know, but it was kind of like they were unsure of themselves, right? Like they were kind of like, well, wait, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like they had that kind of fear of screwing up, I think, because Brent is loud and
sure
going to be in your ear. So I think that's what I think my view on it is I to agree with you and to say that I also think that there's a little bit of that closing that gap on those small details.
Correct. And I think that you're right. I'm just saying, even if that happens, right? Even if they're completely sure of their assignment, but they don't have football IQ, the defense can only go this far.
Right. Oh, right? No, yeah, I agree with you. Like, yeah.
And that's, so I'm saying in order for them to get to the playoff, we need to see that the guys that they have recruited and the guys that are on this roster actually freaking know football. And they actually freaking know film study to the point that they know exactly what the other team is bringing before the other team even does, right? It's that old school, the 30 for 30 on Bosworth when I can't remember who it was. It was the Oklahoma State quarterback going, he was audibling to our play before I started audibling to our.
He said, I actually watched that the other day and he said, we had two audibles. One was like a run up the middle and another one was a slant. And I audible to the slant from the up the middle to the slant. And he immediately said, watch for the slant.
Yeah.
Like that's how Boz was, which by the way, I just want to, again, still for a second. I think it's funny that some people are trying to roast Danny and Kanick and,
Pichotti
for their hair. And I'm like, dude, Boz did the same thing and everybody celebrated it. What do we, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
but it wasn't pink and purple. I think
I agree, but it's,
And it's a perm. It's not a bleach,
oh, I know.
Like
mohawk. I know. But I'm saying it's doing a crazy hairstyle. It's like,
oh, well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Some of those same people would have been like, Boz is the greatest for getting. Because if you look at that time in the 80s, it's like he had rainbow in his hair at one point. You know what I mean? Sure. It's like, yeah, it same thing. Anyway, go ahead.
My number two thing that is going to push this team into the playoff is, I don't know who yet. I think they're in a war right now, but either Nick Anderson or Jaden Gibson is going to become that dude at wide receiver. And if they do, it's going to change everything, because you have nobody else on the roster like them, right? Petaway, 6 foot or under, right? Gavin Freeman, 5'5 or under. I'm just kidding. He's like 5'8, but you know, Drake Stoops, 5'8 or under. Like, you don't have anybody built like those guys to where you can throw up some jump balls and let them go to work. And both of them have great speed. If one of those two guys emerges as the dude, like, and really emerges as elite, the offense is going to be completely opened up. And when you start thinking about the speed of Gavin Freeman and his smallness underneath, dude, like, Levy really can then start to orchestrate some things. But one of those two guys is actually going to turn into the receiver for this offense when they need a big play and they need something to get going. And it's going to open up more for Barnes, for Sawchuk, for Gavin, for everybody else to know that they're out there, right? So that's my two. Now, and number three, this team will make the playoffs because there's no one elite on this defense. Or sorry, no one elite on this defensive line. Now that sounds weird, but what I mean is this. I'm going to say that Dejon Terry, Jordan Kelly, Isaiah Coe, I will even put Grayson Halton in there somewhere, and probably one more, a Gilliam or somebody, right? But that top five in the interior is going to be so close to the exact same person. Different skill sets, right? But like, you have zero drop off. That our defensive line is going to be the body blow engine of this defense,
because they're Montgomery,
huh?
Like it was with Montgomery,
a little bit, sure. But I mean, I think it's going to be like hockey. It's just going to be line change after line change after line change. And by the fourth quarter, that O line is going to be going, these guys should be tired, and they're not. They're not tired at all. And they're just going to keep coming in waves, right? So, again, this defensive line is not going to be elite. I'm just saying that right now. And they could still make the playoff if they truly have five-ish guys that they can completely count on and just keep bringing them in over and over and over again. And then whoever you really think is your little 1% better crew, they close it out for you and go. But if they can do that, holy crap, like, it's going to be a absolute game changer for sure. My number four is that BB does two things in his coaching style. Number one, here's one thing I did not see from BB last year. BB as a head coach was not BB defensive coordinator in his demeanor, right? And it felt like to me, it was a constant of him trying to be this under control head coach, right? And that's just not who he is. That is, like, I understand he can't be completely involved on the defense and he has to see everything, but that energy and enthusiasm, the walking out on the field and telling people what to do, we need get back Coach BB. That's who we need on a Saturday, and yet we need him to do it for both sides of the ball and across the board. And within that, he needs to be that guy that can still manage a game, right? So those kind of go hand in hand. But BB has to be who he is with game management. If we get that, the energy level of that sideline is going to come up, and the enthusiasm and the intensity of that sideline is going to come up. If we get that, this is the team that's going to playoff. And then my last is this. I agree with you. The O-line is not very deep. The only two guys that we hear of out of the starters right now that feel like the coaches could feel confident in is Caden Green and if Jacob Sexton can find any kind of help whatsoever, right? Those are the only two. But you do have some nasty. Tyler Guyton should be able to move whoever he wants out of his way. Savion Byrd should be able to move whoever he wants out of his way. Walter Rouse should be a late first round to an early second round pick and should be able to move somebody. Cade Matar, I don't know how I feel about you right now, to be honest, but I will say this. He has admittedly said that plane on the West Coast took his edge away from him, and it's back. And if that's true, here's what I would say. This O-line in this Big 12 with these teams that you're playing has to get 3 yards whenever they want. And if this O-line is one that will come up to the line of scrimmage and say, guess what? We're going power eye on this left side right here, right in this gap, and there's nothing you can do about it, and we're going to push you backwards off the snap of the ball, this team will be in a college football playoff. They will be in a college football playoff.
You know, and to highlight that, what was the last great OU offensive line? The 2017 one, right? The Rose Bowl, Rose Bowl one, right?
Yep.
Bring your lunch pail kind of O-line, right? I still remember Drew Samia getting caught dropping a cuss word ish on into the camera because he was yelling because he was just so fired up.
Yeah.
Right. That's the last time you had that. And name an offensive lineman, maybe a offensive lineman in the last 5 years that's had that. Yeah. Right. Like as much as people could try to, it's like Drew Samia went and knocked people down. Orlando Brown went and knocked people down. All those guys on that line, like maybe Creed Humphrey is the only guy that I could probably highlight. And I would just say that's an anomaly. Everybody else gave that West Coast vibe, which maybe that's why Lincoln went to USC. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like you mm-hmm. haven't had that. And that's what Brent's thing's all fully built on. It's even what his defense is built on is bring your lunch pail and get to work.
Think about it like this. The last time that you've seen a highlight reel put together for the O-line was the Big 12 championship when Hager from Texas. Remember that?
Yeah.
Where it was just play after play of them just punishing him because he made comments that they were going to win the Big 12 and he was going to get to cut his hair, right? And instead he nearly cut his arm off. But anyways, that was the deal. When have you seen that?
Yeah.
That's not been there.
Yeah. And again, that's the mentality shift, right? Like we talked about a little bit of the strength and conditioning has been a thing that's brought up. And it's the same thing because like I actually was listening. Oh God, who was it? It wasn't Teddy and Gabe, but there was somebody I was listening that there maybe it was like a tweet or something, basically saying that they were like there was times where like players technically had the right that they could say like, okay, I gotta go study or I'm gonna go home or whatever. And they were so terrified of Schmitty that they kept practicing because they knew that if they didn't, the next day Schmitty would work them even harder in that time frame.
Correct.
So you know what I mean? Like the Schmitty factor, I'm telling you, I know people are going to call me crazy. The Schmitty factor is real to me. I feel like that's another thing that's maybe add that to my number six, but that kind of mentality is what gets built into weight room. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, you and I both played for a school that was run the ball, right? Like we passed the ball more than you did, but still it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust, right? Yeah. And that's what it was in the weight room. It was you had your coaches screaming at you. It was intense. It was that fiery. That's what I when I see Brent Venables' style, just from the outside, obviously, mm-hmm. that's what it reminds me of. Is that just you? That's what they taught us. You know, it didn't matter if you were out, if you're the wide out, go knock your guy down. Go mm-hmm. make him. I mean, I can remember Coach Higby, Coach Ogles, all those guys yelling at us, go make them see snot bubbles. That's what they told us, you know? Yeah. And that's what you got to get back to. And you said, maybe they're kind of getting that edge back. That's something they're going to have, especially this year. If they do that in the Big 12, that's great. That's great. That's going to be a great stepping stone. But when they get to the Big 12, I'm going to tell you, they're going to have to turn that to 11 because
the SEC.
Sorry. Yeah. When they get to the SEC, when they get to the SEC, that's how it's going to be. Of every team you go against, you can't play. There's no team in the SEC that's going to not have at least one guy that's not going to try to knock your lid off. Every team has that.
Yeah.
And so they're going to have to really learn that. But I agree with you. If they start getting that edge back and that offensive line, like you said, they should have that. Could be actually a lot better than we think.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I think even like, think about Kansas State. That's them. Just in the trenches, we're coming. And you're not stopping us, right? We're going to run the ball right down your throat, and you can't stop us from doing it, you know? And you're going to have that. And against Texas, who I do believe has more talent than us, I think their roster is better built. But you come into that game with a mentality of we are going to punish you, right? Like, I know I've said this story like 75 times on the podcast, but like when I think about those scenarios of where it really is a tough scenario to be in, it's that my old youth pastor from high school telling me the story that time about playing pickup basketball with this guy and at a local gym, and he went to the rack and he fouled him pretty hard on accident, but he fouled him hard. And the guy immediately got in his face and said, "Do you want to go right now? Is that?" And he said, the guy was just enormous. And he goes, "I will pummel you." And my youth pastor looked at him and said, "I know you will, but you'll bleed before this is over." And the guy just backed up because he was just like, you know, like that's the mentality. Like, y'all are going to beat us 49-0. That's fine. But there's going to be three of you over there getting ice packs on you because we're going to punish you for it. Right. Like, it's just a never stop, never give up, go out mentality.
It's the, who was I was listening to talk about that today, but they were like, "I might lose, but you're going to take me out of here in a body bag."
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that sort of mentality. And it's like, and again, there's another thing that we haven't really seen as much, I think, is like you said, the, I feel like that's even trailed off, that they're having to rebuild is a little bit of that, like us versus everybody mentality, right? Where, you know, like the guy, like you said, Hager was talking trash. The whole team punished him. The entire team did.
Yep.
It wasn't just Orlando Brown. It wasn't just Drew Samia. It wasn't even just the offensive line. Anybody that had a chance to hit him. And if he said something, they all were there.
Yep.
Right. And there was that kind of like team, like a really unified team, unified front mentality. It's like, I kind of now, like when I look back, I was like, was there that, like the offense kind of maybe a little bit here and there with some guys, you know, but it kind of felt like there was like clicks on the team, yeah, of certain people. And it's like, if you can have that mentality of like, oh, we heard somebody, you know, what was it? Who was it in the 2000 game that went over to Winky and said, you got Torrance my boy's Marshall trophy. Yeah. Torrance Marshall went over to Winky and said, "You got my boy's trophy."
Yeah.
Like that kind of mentality. So yeah, I'm hoping we have that. I mean, I think there's a lot of, like, honestly, if I'm going to be honest, to me, I don't think we go 12-0, right? We already said that. But I'm closer to that than I think I am the doom and gloom. Maybe that's me putting the sunshine on. I know there's a lot of things that have to go right. Another thing that I just want to highlight, because I just, you know, this was my pick, my preseason pick or whatever. I have a feeling Pettaway is actually going to show out. Like, I have a feeling Pettaway is going to do something. If you look back, like, you have Ryan Broyles, you have CeeDee Lamb, you have Sterling Shepard. You have all these freshman phenoms come out of kind of, I mean, like, they were highly touted guys, right? Like, all of them were, but they all had that special. And it's like, I just, for some reason, get that vibe with Pettaway.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he definitely is going to play, and he's definitely going to be a factor. You know, part of the problem is their pace of play. You know, they want to play so fast that they don't rotate a lot of guys, or at least they didn't last year. The guy that scares me right now, because we have not heard his name at all, other than the open of fall camp when Emmett Jones said he's like Percy Harvin, and that's Jahlil Farouk.
Yeah.
I have not heard his name from a scrimmage. I haven't heard a DB talk about him. Nothing. And that's a guy you need to produce.
Hey, here's the hopium. Slide of hand, dog. Slide of hand. They told everybody, don't talk about Jahlil Farouk. He's our ace in the hole.
He's our ace in the hole. Maybe.
So yeah, I mean, it's gonna be, like I said, there's a lot of things that have to go right. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. I think we end up somewhere in the middle, but of course. I mean, yeah, it's one of those great things about, I mean, we're almost there, dude. It's week zero.
I know. It's week zero.
You don't know how, like, I literally, like, what's so funny is I woke up one morning and I can pull my phone out. And it's just, I'm still going to call it Twitter. Okay. I'm not calling it X. I'm calling it Twitter.
Amen.
Whatever. It feels so, like, I feel disgusting when I say X. Like, did you see my post on X? You know how disgusting that sounds? Like, anyway, pulled up Twitter and somebody was like, it was funny. It was like, I think it may have been today, but it was like somebody posted, it's David Stone week of college football because he's number zero. And I was like, oh my God, it is. Like, this week I get college football. this is my Christmas. That's what I always say. Like, this is my Christmas is college football season. Like,
yes,
I live for this time of year. So
it is. And just so you guys know, our hope, you know, again, Jared's got a full-time job. I've got a full-time job. I got three kids I'm chasing all over the place. Troy's got three kids he's chasing all over the place, full-time job. Our hope will be to give a preview and a review, if that makes sense, each week throughout the season to kind of look ahead to what we're going to deal with, what things we want to see out of the team for that week, and then what actually transpires and happens. So we'll see if we can get to that. And then also want to let you know as we get ready to kind of wrap this up, we are going to actually do a joint pod later on this week with Bud, Barry, Bob, and Beer podcast. Great guys, Kamiar and Steven over there. Man, they've been more than gracious to us. I can tell you that much. Since we've started this thing, they've been encouraging and
anybody that puts up with you has been more than gracious.
100%. Yeah. And,
35 years.
We're real excited, to get to go hang and talk a little bit of the season and do some predictions on the season, with them. And so it should be good. So again, hope you liked it. Again, this is the doom, gloom, the dark hopium, whatever you want to call it. We're calling it dark hopium. That is all the dark we can give you. Like for us, those are the things that derail this team and put us right back where we were last year and start us on the road to be in Nebraska. And the other end, we can easily see us being in the playoff this year.
Starts going off the rails, you have to change your name to Derail.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
One quick thing before we wrap.
Yes.
Baker Mayfield was officially announced Tampa Bay starting quarterback. Yes. I was actually surprised because like they've actually made like two or three posts now about it. Like they put like let's bake and shake and bake and Baker's our guy or whatever. Like they've actually been like hyping him up a little bit. So
I was kind of shocked because I thought Trask played really good in the game he started in. He didn't play bad. So who knows, man? But I mean, this is it. He can't.
This is his last stop.
There's no excuses about this team's not good. This team's tanking. He has to take it upon himself, regardless of what is going on, to carry this team and will this team to win. Like he has to do that, or he is going to be riding a bench, holding the clipboard for the rest of his career. And that's if a team will even do that, just because he is so polarizing. I think there'll be some teams that won't even want to sign him as a backup just to not have to deal with the chaos that is Baker Mayfield.
I think the good thing that's kind of won over a lot of people is, I mean, he's not as polarizing as he used to be. Right. And also like we've heard, you know, the Rams talked about how he won the locker room very quickly. Browns players still talk positively about him. I mean, like even the Buccaneers, like there's been so many so many franchises now that have come out and said like he's won the locker room. He's got a leadership mentality that I think that might actually help him some. But yeah, I mean, if he wants to be QB1, then he's going to have to really show out this year.
Yeah.
And I think they have some good talent on that roster. So I think he has the tools. I think my question would be the offensive line, but you know, we'll just have to see what he is able to do. Like I said, I'm just glad that my boy got a starting job. So I guess I'm gonna have to get like a Tampa Bay flag to hang up or something
Gosh. That's awesome. Do it to it, man. Well, again, we hope you've enjoyed it. Hope it's been good for you. It's been great for us. And again, don't forget, if you live in the Edmond, Deer Creek, Piedmont, Cashin area, my church over at Gateway Community Church, we get to have Curtis Lofton hanging out with us on Saturday from 11 to 1:30. Going to be a lot of great food, cornhole, college football game day stuff showing out all over the place. And so come and hang out with us. Be a great time. It's just $10 to get in, and we're giving away prizes all day too. So well worth your time. And if you can be out there and be a part of it, and we hope you'll join us next week as well as we hit this thing up again. So again, like, subscribe, follow, do all the things. We're having a great time. We hope you guys are too. I'm Daryl. That's Jared. And we will talk to you guys later.
Bye, Baker.
Cha-ching, it's under money ball.
You can unhitch the wagon. Put the ponies in the ball.